Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Heart Center, where expert cardiologists, cardiac surgeons, nurses, and support staff have built a nationally recognized program focused on prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation. For a virtual tour of the Heart Center, we'll tell you that in a minute because it's not on my sheet. I'm sorry. We'll reread that one and get that on the air because they are our underwriters, and without Maryland, we wouldn't be here. So we'll read that to you in just a minute. We are joined in studio right now by our three guests. We're going to look at what happened in the Massachusetts election, what's going on with the Democrats and President Barack Obama. We'll posit some things here about what we think may be going on. I will, and then throw it out to our guests. We're joined in studio. One of our guests is Buzzy Hedelman. Now, Buzzy was supposed to be on the show today to talk about his brand-new book, It's the Classroom, Stupid, A Plan to Save America's School Children, which is really a great book. I mean, we'll have him back on for that. But Buzzy is also a former campaign manager for several state and local political campaigns, from Senator Sarbanes, who was involved in Dallas Angel's campaign in the 60s. He helped found the 5th District Democratic Club as one of the first interracial Democratic groups in the city. He led the first interracial team to run for the Constitutional Convention in Maryland. He worked for Kurt Schmoke's campaign, many other campaigns, has been deeply involved politically most of his life. His foray also included our dear friend Clinton Bamberger, who's recovering now, and when he ran for Attorney General in
1966. And he's recovering also from the political campaign.
From back in the 66. Your management has been recovering. Anne McCarthy joins us once again. She's a political analyst and former Republican candidate for Comptroller of the State of Maryland, which is where we met. She's now Associate Dean at the Johns Hopkins Carey Business School.
Thank you, Mark. I'm happy to be here.
Good to have you here. When you were running, you were dean at the University of
Baltimore Business School.
Anthony McCarthy, who's one of the deans of radio, is here. He's host of the Anthony McCarthy Show every Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. here on WEAA, and co-hosts with me every week, every Monday on this program. And, folks, good to have you all with us.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Be here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And bring us your thoughts about what happened in Massachusetts and what's going on with the tenor of this nation. Maybe it's part of your tenor as well. There was a very interesting poll that Huffington Post highlighted. I found it really interesting because this is some things they found in this poll. The people who voted in this election, that a lot of the Democrats who voted in this election, I think I have this right, 37% of the voters who said they were Democrats, who voted for Obama, switched over to vote for the Republican because Democrats were not hard enough on challenging Republican policies. So to teach the Democrats a lesson, they voted for the Republican, which I found really interesting. Those who voted for him, of those who either stayed home or opposed, for voters who stayed home and opposed health care, 53% said they opposed the Senate health care bill because it didn't go far enough. 39% said they weren't sure, and only 8% said it went too far. But clearly there seems to be something that's going on here with voters in all the states that have turned Democrats out. Let's start with this, that there are the folks who just hate Barack Obama and push the teabag world, and they're just rebuilding a political movement that's opposing the Democrats. They clearly are a force. But then there's all those, and this poll showed it, huge mass of people not sure what they believe, but they don't feel things are going right. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of Democrats, a large portion of progressives, who are saying, is this what we fought for? And the Republicans are kind of really being able to take hold because That's one reason. Let's talk about where we think that is. Buzzy, why don't we start with you, then we'll go over to Anne and let Anthony, since he's here all the time, clean up.
Sounds good.
Go ahead.
A big dispiriting subject, but you remember the old line, Will Rogers, I'm not a member of any political party, I'm a Democrat. And, you know, you can blame the Tea Party and Michael Steele and Sarah Palin. I blame the Democrats. The Democrats are terribly divided. And they don't represent a coherent narrative. And I don't blame independents for being fed up with the performance, even though I think that maybe the president got the best he could get out of the Senate on the health care bill, the way he had to get it, the pandering by the Democratic senators, is absolutely unconscionable. And so, and then, of course, the other big dimension to this is the jobs issue. And there I do fault President Obama from day one. His appointments of his economic team were, you know, carryovers from the discredited years before, the Geithners, the Bernanke, the Summers. And so by doing that, he undermined his chance of a coherent narrative that this is the Bush administration's fault and we've got to have a fresh start. He just seemed to be carrying on. And I think the country is paying the price for that.
Ann?
Well, I think that the independents won the election for the new senator from Massachusetts. And interestingly enough, I don't think that would have happened if he had been far more conservative than he is. He is the kind of Republican that will only be able to stand a chance in the general election against a Democrat because he's not so far right as so many of the Tea Party members are. And that, I think, is the great challenge for the Republican Party, not to basically put forward through its primary system only the really far right candidates that don't appeal to either right-leaning Democrats or independents.
Mark, Michael Steele said something very interesting this morning. He said that Brown's message in Massachusetts of lower taxes, smaller government, and fiscal responsibility clearly resonated with independent-minded voters in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I think he is right to the extent that there was a great deal of anger in Massachusetts about healthcare. But the other things, Brown ran as a moderate mm-hmm. Republican. He ran as I don't want to say an anecdote to Attorney General Coakley, but he said, look, send me there because I'm going to be an independent voice. And that resonated because there was this, and it has a lot to do with what Buzzy said about this coherent message. On Facebook all day, I was talking to folks, Mark, about the loss of the Senate seat there and why we think Barack Obama's in trouble. To the person, whether they were conservatives, moderates, or liberals, they said Barack Obama has to stand up and speak to these issues. We have to know that he's in charge. They were so upset about the compromises that were made in the Senate with Senator Nelson, with Senator Lieberman, with Evan Bayh, and all of these folks who are in bed with the health insurance companies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But Barack Obama needed that health care bill to come out. So a lot of deals were made. Well, I think both liberals and conservatives can really point to Barack Obama's administration right now and say, what do they stand for? Now, granted, Barack Obama has done a lot in this first year. He's taken on a lot. But the message gets lost because they spend too much time responding to the far right. They respond to Beck. They respond to Limbaugh. They respond to Michael Steele. Instead of saying, this is who we are. And I think it spells trouble mm-hmm. if they don't change this message in the midterm elections, because Senator-elect Brown is a very attractive candidate to independents. But he may, and others, like Senator-elect Brown, may be very attracted to these Democrats who are looking for someone who speaks their mind and speaks it forcefully.
I agree. I would also say that it's a lot like Bob Ehrlich running against Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. I mean, you had a very charismatic candidate who was a moderate Republican running against not-so-charismatic Democrat who was a far-left liberal. And so those sorts of things, I think, played into it, too.
I think it's a very worrisome dynamic. I think the Dems were in good shape as long as the Republican Party was dominated by Michael Steele and Sarah Palin. And, you know, the extreme right. Now, look at Virginia, you look at New Jersey, you look at Massachusetts, each of the Republicans who won there was centrist. And that's a much more dangerous picture for the Democrats to deal with.
The thing I would disagree with is McConnell in Virginia is not a centrist. He's a far right candidate. He ran as a centrist.
Yeah, he cast himself.
He cast himself as a centrist,
but he's not really.
And he's not really. He's
you
made.
You would know.
Yeah, that's right. But he's made his political career as the leading anti-choice, homeschool candidate. But also, I think Buzzy is onto something. What these folks are doing, they're talking about the message, Mark. McConnell in Virginia. What's the gentleman
Weems?
in New Jersey?
Weems?
No, I can't remember. Ritchie?
Who won?
Who won, yeah. Isn't that terrible? They are talking about jobs. Christie. That's his name. His name is Christie. They're talking about job creation, not health care. They're talking about getting the economy set straight and getting people back to work. And in a country like Baltimore was just named the third best city in America to find a job. Well, when I posted that on my page, I was inundated with messages from people saying, oh, where did they poll these folks? I've been looking for a job for a year. Or where are these jobs available? People want jobs, Mark. And the Barack Obama administration and people like Geithner and Sumner and the young lady who runs – the woman who runs the stimulus board, they are not speaking about jobs. They are talking about a whole host of other things that are important. But Americans want to know that the economy is getting better and they're going to go back to work.
You were talking earlier, someone I think mentioned, I think it might have been Anne McCarthy said it first, that it was the independents who did this. And people, because I think one of the reasons that Barack Obama appealed to a certain segment of America, and I'm not talking about the progressives who formed his volunteer base so much, as the group that I always call – when I call them muddled, that's not right because people aren't muddled. That's really a pejorative. People who really in many ways can go either way in election, it's not always ideological, thought that voting for Barack Obama was voting for somebody who was going to be different, who was going to bring change to Washington and would be an independent thinker and an independent force. And I think that they don't see that. They don't perceive that. And they can go – and I think that, you know, when people – if he could have gone what people like to in the punditry industry would like to go is right or left. But I don't think a lot of people look at that in terms of right or left. They look at as somebody getting something done and being an independent force. I think that group that can go either way has become extremely disillusioned with what they've seen.
And challenging the conventional way of doing business. He wants to. He means to. But he hasn't done it. And he obviously made a political decision that he wanted to get health care through. And so he would play the game. But it has backfired in many respects. And the question is now, how might he turn it around?
He made the decision to get health care through by a certain date, not to get health care through that had certain qualities to it. And so if you're driven by a date, then you're going to do what you can to get it through by that date to say, look, I promised it by January 2010, and I delivered, regardless of what it is. And that's the problem with President Obama. It's a, we'll be out of Guantanamo by such and such a date. We'll have health care by such and such a date. We'll have this. You can't be date driven. I understand the purpose of deadlines, but in the end, he ends up getting this mishmash that people are not very happy with.
The saving grace for Barack Obama and his administration right now, Mark, is even in these doom and gloom that people point to in these poll numbers, Huffington Post, U.S. News and World Report, Washington Post, CNN, I read all these polls. Barack Obama's approval numbers are right below 50%. Which is very disturbing to a lot of people. But you have to remember, when he was having 78, 80, 85% approval rating, that was unrealistic. Was not governing. But the only saving grace for him right now, if they make a change, Mark, is that the Republicans are polling so low still. And even Democrats in Congress are polling so low as far as the American people's approval of their job performance. Republicans are polling somewhere about 25%. And so they have a long way to go to build the trust of the American people back, but they're going to do it by people like Senator-elect Brown in Massachusetts bringing that moderate, coherent message against Democrats who don't seem to – Coakley was just a horrible candidate, which is shocking because she was the attorney general. She's ran statewide. But she made gaffe after gaffe. She didn't know certain people. She even made this comment. I was listening to this piece, Mark. I'll stop. But
that's all right.
I was listening to this piece where one of the disc jockeys asked her about a baseball player who plays for Boston, and she made the comment, oh, I'm he's a New York fan, and the DJ had to point out, no, Kurt, he's one of ours. You Kurt, know,
that
lady?
Was Kurt, that was Kurt Schilling. I don't know anything about politics, but
and so it's just fascinating. So I'm not sure if we can blame Obama and health care for her loss, but boy, she was running against a great candidate.
Yeah, I don't think we can blame health care. It is jobs. But I was also to say to President Obama, stop listening to some of his staff. They should not have sent him there on Sunday. It looks like the Olympics all over again. He makes this big thing of going to Copenhagen, and then they reject us. Well, he goes to Massachusetts 2 days before the election, and they basically reject him. That's putting his stamp on it. They should have either sent him a month ago or not sent him at all.
And, Mark, his advisors were saying, look, they didn't want us to come in. They started pointing fingers real early, saying we would have gone if Coakley would have asked us to come in earlier. But they asked us to come in at the last minute, and we went. And as Ann said, huge mistake, because when you swoop in like that as the savior and you don't save them, then it looks like contributed to the loss.
I would differ a little on that. I think to do the right thing for what he believed in was to go to Massachusetts. To do the right thing for what he believed in, he should have gone to Copenhagen and fought the good fight, and that's what people want him to do, even if he loses, is to fight the good fight and show his convictions. Well,
No, maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe one of the issues here is that people wanted him to fight the good fight, mm-hmm. and many people think he's not fighting the good fight. I like what a listener should join us at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this very critical period between Republicans and Democrats and Barack Obama's administration and where Democrats are. Health care is in real danger. We'll talk about what that means. And some of us say it's a good thing it's in danger because the bill's no good anyway. We're going to talk about that as well. Mm-hmm. The unemployment issues America faces. Why you think this is happening. Many of you I know who listen to this program and to the station voted for Barack Obama. I would say the vast majority – I would go out on a limb and say the majority of people who listen to the show probably voted for Barack Obama. I'm going to go out on that limb. I think I'm fairly safe out there in that limb. Though not all. Mm-hmm. 410-319-8888. We're here with Buzzy Hettleman, who was supposed to be here to talk about his book, It's the Classroom, Stupid, a plan to save America's school children. He's a political activist. He'll be talking about that book, by the way, at the Enoch Pratt Central Library on Tuesday, January 26th at 6:30 p.m., which is why I was going to be here to talk about the book. We'll slide him back to that. Ann McCarthy ran for comptroller as a Republican. She's now associate dean at the Johns Hopkins Carey Business School. And, of course, Anthony McCarthy, you know that voice and those thoughts. He's host of the Anthony McCarthy Show every Friday here at 5 to 7 p.m. on WEA and co-host with me every Monday. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on all this. Kevin Zeese wrote to me earlier in the day, who is a political activist on the progressive end of the spectrum. He wrote in, I wonder if losing three big elections in a row, New Jersey, Virginia, and Massachusetts, will wake the Democrats up. Looks to me like their voters are smarter than Democrats give them credit for. They can see the corrupt corporate cronyism, the thing they thought they would diminish, has gotten worse under their leadership. This is the time to push Democrats to real solutions. One silver lining of no longer having 60 votes. The Democrats can propose legislation that actually solves problems, and the Republicans can block them. The Democrats can at least look like they stand for something and get their base excited again, and the people will see the Republicans for what they are.
Amen. I mean, I think the fundamental issue is one of corporate power, and you know, the word populist is perhaps overused, but it still represents a powerful theme in American history. And it is something that Barack Obama is going to have to identify him with. It doesn't have to be completely liberal in all respects, but it's got to have the working people in the forefront. And the symbol of that and the cause that we have, in my view, so many issues that are near and dear to progressives of social inequalities and injustices is because Big corporations control the media. They unduly influence elections and what goes on in Congress. And until somebody is willing to stand up to that in a meaningful and genuine way, then I think Dems are going to be missing a coherent narrative.
But it's the conservatives and the Cato Institute and the American Enterprise Institute that are calling for competition across state lines of insurance companies. And the House bill had that in it, in the sense that the health marketplace that they were going to create would compete across state lines. And the Senate bill by these Democratic left senators did not have that in it. And you're not going to have, we are not going to have true health care reform. And I have to wonder how many of those senators get huge contributions from their local Blue Cross Blue Shields, of which 50 of them are small monopolies.
I look at all the money Chris Dodd got over the years, and he supposedly is in charge of, you know, restoring financial oversight.
Anthony?
Well, I think that one of the things that I, you know, and I, this is anecdotal, but Mark, I think people want a strong Barack Obama. Whether you are a conservative and you're challenging this administration, or you are to the far left and you're challenging this administration, I think people want Barack Obama to stand up and have a come to Jesus conversation with the Democratic leadership in Congress and say, look, these are the progressive issues that we bought this coalition together and won this election. And either we stick by these and move forward, whether we're talking about Afghanistan, whether we're talking about Wall Street and stimulus, whether we're talking about transportation policy, or we're talking whatever it is, Homeland Security. People want him to say, as Democrats, you gave us this huge majority. They have 60 in the Senate, or did, but they have a huge majority in the House. And they want an agenda that moves. And every time Nancy Pelosi drops the ball, every time Harry Reid drops the ball, and every time Ben Nelson from Nebraska holds his party hostage, or Evan Bayh, or
Mary Landrieu.
Yeah. Every time they do that, I think those independents who wanted strong leadership, who wanted people to move forward, and I think that those progressives and Democrats lose faith in Barack Obama. He, you know, it's the first time, Mark, I've ever really started thinking, he's only been in office for a year, but he may be a one-term president.
You said, yeah.
Kevin Zeese has a good point about not being not having 60 votes in the Senate, because what they had to do to get those 60 was make huge deals with individuals here and there. Now they won't.
And one of those deals in Massachusetts is what the Republicans used against the Democrats.
Went after them.
Which is, you're going to make us pay for everybody else's health care in America? You know, you're going to give Landrieu money, and you're going to give Ben Nelson money. And the polls showed that things began to turn in December when Harry Reid made those deals.
Exactly.
People got sick of the power mongering from corporations and politicians. I think that's what turned people off.
And look,
then we'll open the phones here.
Look at the deal that they made with Joe Lieberman. I mean,
my mother lives in Connecticut.
You know, it's a complete lack of principle.
It is.
And, you know, one bold thing, maybe it's not politically feasible, but if I were Obama, I would go after the 60-vote rule in the Senate. It's unconstitutional. It's anti-democratic. And go after it, even if it could rebound to the detriment of the Dems when the Republicans. It's the right thing to do, and I'd love to see Obama take it on.
Let us open the phones here. Buzzy Hettleman, Anthony McCarthy, Ann McCarthy. They're not related.
But we're good friends.
In spirit, we are.
That's right.
You and I are lodgemen.
419-8888. Your thoughts on all of this? Of course, you never know what happens in Gen X way back.
Wow.
Let's open the phone. 419-8888. And let's see. Going first, we're going to go Mike, so you guys know who's holding on here. Mike, Reg, Dennis, Ellen. You called in that order. That's how we're taking you. And Mike, you're on the air.
Okay, good evening, folks.
Hi, Mike.
I got to disagree with something. What a shock. But I'm going to disagree that we need a strong Obama. We don't need a strong Obama. We need a strong progressive movement. Obama hoodwinked the progressives to support him. Goldman Sachs was his his real base of support. They're who gave him the money. We need something stronger, something that could build a real progressive America. And the polls that Anthony cited about the low party support for the Republicans and the Democrats, I think they're an indication that it's time for something new. We have to build a progressive movement that has its own party. Yes, a third party. It sounds so impractical, but the proof of how realistic it is if you sound practical now, you're supporting one deal or another. We're not doing that. We need a cooperative society, and we need a party that stands for that. Obama, I'm afraid to say, has never been that. People thought, frankly, when I listen to him, he sounds good. But what he does is a different thing altogether. We need the real deal.
All right.
All right. So I
appreciate it, Mike. Let's get some thoughts from the panel before we go back to the phones. I think that, Buzzy?
Well, we do need a strong progressive movement. I think it was Colin Powell's line a bunch of years ago that we don't need a third party in this country. We need a second party. And that, the Dems are too much like the Republicans in many respects. Certainly, half of the Dems in the Congress could just as easily be Republicans if the Republicans had a bigger tent. But that's not going to be enough. And again, as the McCarthy team has been saying, the Dems need a coherent message, and it's great for progressives to beat the Bushes and get support for that.
Let's talk about, let me give you this thought. I mean, because I think that, let me quote Barack Obama Wednesday night. The president said, "It's very important to look at the substance of this package," talking about health care, "and for the American people to understand that a lot of the fear-mongering around this bill isn't true. I would advise that we try to move quickly to coalesce around those elements of the package that people agree on." And then people started, part of the thing he's talking about to his advisors is passing, again, a stripped-down bipartisan package that falls short of the goal of near universal coverage, health coverage for Americans. Now, I think that's one of the things I would posit, if I was, and I'll throw this out to you all, and I'll hear listeners' take as well, that's one of the reasons that the Democrats are losing, because that's what they're doing, because they're not fighting for what people thought they were going to fight for, mm-hmm. and that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And some people might argue between Republicans and Democrats, what's wrong with a little bit of partisan warfare over the future of the country? Mm-hmm. Maybe people want that. So anyway, let me throw that out to you all.
Well, I would agree. I would not shrink from the universal coverage. I would just go about making it happen in a different way.
And I think that, Mark, you hit on something. I think that people want the Democrats, and I just believe this in my heart. I have nothing to prove it, but I think people want those Democrats to say what they mean and then push the Republicans to challenge them. Because you know what, Mark? When you give people a stripped-down, compromise bill and then none of the Republicans vote for it, you have really just sold out your progressive foundation.
Well, see, part of the problem, though, that we tend to forget is that so many of the Democrats were elected 2 years ago as a reaction against George W. Bush, not because they were Democrats. And so we got these blue dog Democrats who are now in trouble, who might lose the next election because they're really in Republican districts.
Take a short break. We have to come back, and we'll go as soon as we come back. Reg, stay with us. Just take a minute. You're the next caller up. We're going to go right to Reg as soon as we come back. Then Ellen. Then Dennis. Dennis. Then Ellen. That's the order. Not sexist. Just the way you called. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop at one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. I want to remind you to join Healthcare for the Homeless for the sweetest night in town, the 19th annual Chocolate Affair. Sample more than 50 of Baltimore's best restaurants, caterers, and chocolatiers while raising the resources and awareness necessary to end homelessness. The Chocolate Affair is Thursday, February the 4th from 6 to 9:30 p.m. at M&T Bank Stadium. Tickets and more information are available at chocolateaffair.org. And as soon as we finish the show tonight, we'll be running down there. Join us. We are talking this hour about what went on in Massachusetts, what this says about our body politic in America, where the conscience of American people are, what you think Democrats should do, and Republicans, in this battle for the hearts and minds of American people, and why they all, in some ways, I'll posit in a few minutes, are losing it, even if they do win these elections. We're joined by Buzzy Hedelman. Buzzy was going to be on the show today to talk about his new book, It's the Classroom Stupid, A Plan to Save America's School Children, and they'll be on next week to talk about that. He's a former campaign manager for several state and local political campaigns, everything from Senator Sarbanes to D'Alessandro in 1967 to Clinton Bamberger in 1966 or 7 when he ran for attorney general. He's here with us now, Ann McCarthy, political analyst and former Republican candidate for comptroller of the state of Maryland. She's now associate dean of the Johns Hopkins Carey Business School. And, of course, Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show every Friday here at 5 to 7 p.m. And co-host of the Mark Steiner Show every Monday. Number here is 410-319-8888. And as I promised, Reg, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Reg.
Hey, you know, I'm a black American, and I know many of my friends that voted for Barack Obama. I think they voted for a theoretical Barack, and they don't know the reality of Barack.
That's an interesting point. Go ahead. Reg, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Go ahead.
So I'm not certain we really know what he stands for. He hasn't in his first year. I'm afraid to say it, though, but it looks like really he's been driven by Nancy and Harry. And instead of him actually producing or directing as chief executive, directing them, I'm afraid he's been led by them. And we don't, I don't see a real leader. I see someone who's being led. And what we wanted when change, I think when black Americans voted, they was hoping for someone who really would exude some type of true leadership. So I don't know. I just don't think I've seen it.
Well, I would agree with Reg in the sense that people may have voted for a theoretical Barack Obama because there wasn't much of a record in terms of his either in the Illinois Senate or in the U.S. Senate in terms of what he voted for, what he stood for. He didn't really co-author or author any major legislation. So he wasn't, there was no record to judge on. There was just a lot of promise, I think, there. And you know, rightly so in some cases.
I think there were times when we look at Barack Obama and we see this Reagan-esque leader that has the ability to speak to your heart and you want to believe that he is able to move this agenda forward. And he's at his best, I have to tell you. When he went out and sold health care, when he was going to those town hall meetings, you didn't see the protests, the blow-ups, he would, and he's so analytical sometimes, he would sit there and explain exactly what he wanted in that bill. Ultimately, he didn't get it. But the people in that audience got it. The people watching it got it. It's when those deals and the same old way of doing business in D.C. has become part of the Barack Obama administration's way of doing business, I think he loses people. But when he really says, this is what I want, and I want Congress to come on board, or if they don't, I'm going to call them out, people respond. Whether you're conservative, moderate, independent, respond to that.
I totally agree.
See, I think he has great leadership skills, but he's made some bad decisions. And he's smart enough to learn from his lessons. And I still feel, as I felt a year ago, that his election was the greatest political event of my lifetime. And I believe in his values, even though he's not perhaps as much of a gut populist as I would like him. I think he is as capable of moving this country in a progressive direction as anybody I can imagine. And I think he's a smart guy. And I think, I hope at this point, even beginning with health care, that we're going to see some change. And there, of course, it seems to me the issue is whether the House is going to pass their bill, and let it go. And, you know, Obama's getting two kinds of advice, one to back off and the other is to go ahead. Go, Barack.
I think, and I'm going to go to the phones here right now, but I just want to throw this out, and it may be a tad provocative, but it's something that I've been mulling over, which is there's when I saw Barack Obama when I was at the Democratic National Convention watching and doing bringing stories back here, and Barack Obama stood up there and gave his speech, and I was sitting with the Maryland delegation right next to the Hawaiian delegation, which is an interesting juxtaposition because watching the Hawaiians being so in the fervor around Barack, obviously. Barack Obama, was that I began to I'm beginning to think now, there's, what I was telling you was, when I watched him, tears were streaming down my face. And so was the man next to me, who was from Guyana. His wife was African-American from Washington. And we were both crying. And we talked, and I realized we were crying because anybody who'd been through what this country's gone through and sees a black man sitting at a podium who might be the president of the United States of America was an overwhelmingly powerful moment. And to watch him go to the White House and this beautiful black family going with him into the White House was just, it was breathtaking for a lot of people in this country, for me. But then there's a difference between the symbolism of what that meant and the substance of what follows. And there's a disconnect there for a lot of people going on right now, and I think that's part of the issue. Let's see what I listen. 410. I was stuttering because I thought Anthony was about to say 410-319-8888. Dennis, you're on the air.
Guys,
welcome.
You can be a great orator and not be a great leader. Now, I want to get my point out, please.
Now, go ahead. You held on a long time. Go ahead.
Not a problem. This was not about Coakley. This was about Obama and Obama's policies. If you study Massachusetts, Massachusetts is heavily Democratic. There are very few Republicans in Massachusetts.
Right.
The people that got Obama elected were independents. Now, if you go back and take a look at Obama's election, the people that got Obama elected were independents. Independents are running from Obama in droves. What happened in Virginia? Independents. And what happened in New Jersey? What independents got him elect these guys elected. People are going against Obama's policies. They still like him as a person. He's a great orator, but he's not a good leader at all. People are standing up and starting to recognizing it. Now, here's what's happening, guys. Unless Obama starts to govern from the center, he will be a one-term president. He will not be president of the United States after 3 years. He has to be a Clinton and recognize that the country is not going to accept the policies, and really the policies that he's quoting are socialist policies. They're not going to tolerate it. I happen to be one black American, and probably only black American, that did not vote for Obama because he had no experience. You need experience in order to be a president. He has none. And you're right, he's being led by Pelosi and Harry Reid. He has no other leadership to follow. Guys, in order for this country to turn around, we've got to have somebody in office that governs from the center, not from the far left.
All right, well, let's have the panel. Dennis, I think you are a man who's not alone in your thoughts in this world. Let's hear what our panelists think. Who wants to go first?
Well, I would
Anne
disagree.
McCarthy.
I would, as the token Republican on this.
You're not a token.
Token Republican and woman in this room. I would say that I think that the Massachusetts election was about those two candidates, not about President Obama. I would also say that Virginia has been just reverted to its Republican state. I mean, I think it was a blip that it had a Democrat as a governor. But I would agree in the sense that governing from the central part is always more effective than governing from either the far right or the far left. And when you think of Reagan, President Reagan, one of the things he did not have a filibuster-proof Senate. He governed in a way in which he convinced both Democrats and Republicans to pass one of the most sweeping tax bill changes we've ever had. I wish we could go back to those days. It was so much simpler. And that's what's sort of lacking right now. I partially agree with you, Dennis, and kind of not.
I think Dennis is completely off base, although I really admire and respect his opinion. Massachusetts is not an overwhelming Democratic state. It is a Democratic state. They've elected 4 Republican governors out of the last 5.
But not a senator since.
I understand that. Kennedy
and Kerry.
Let's say Maryland is number 1.
That's right.
Massachusetts is number 2.
That's right. I mean, it's a Democratic state, but they elect Republicans. This election wasn't about Barack Obama as much as people like to say it is. And I would argue, if we're talking Afghanistan, if we're talking stimulus package in Wall Street, if you're talking even this health care package, although a lot of conservatives say it's socialized medicine and government-run health care, that didn't get in there. I would dare argue, if you talk to progressives, they're going to tell you Barack Obama's already governing from the center. I think that for some people, they look at this black man, they look at his black face, and they look at the fact that he is a Democrat, and they assign a whole lot to him that really is not part of the Barack Obama agenda or administration. And just ask the progressives about where Barack Obama stands. I was watching a piece that I appeared in, Mark, on BBC this morning, where they talked to a lot of white liberals down at some of the markets here in Baltimore. And those folks were very honest. They said, look, I need a much more liberal agenda. I need us to start downsizing in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I need him to stop bailing out these banks. I mean, so, you know, he's not governing from the left. He's not a socialist,
you know,
as Dennis just said.
It's too bad that none of the polls so far, maybe they'll get to this point. It's fascinating to me that Massachusetts, under Mitt Romney as governor, installed, so to speak, a law that requires every Massachusetts resident to have health insurance. And so why didn't any of the polls ask, you know, how has this law impacted you and how has this impacted your perception of what's going on at the federal level? That would have been interesting.
Well, maybe the problem there is that the national health reform wasn't as much in their interest as it was for other people around the country. And that's the root of all this. It seems to me, is you mentioned, Mark, before, you know, the social conscience of America. The problem is that the social conscience of America is at war with the culture of individualism and materialism that reigns, and there is no sense of the common good in this country and the importance of government. And I think that was reflected in the Massachusetts vote. I think it was half Coakley and half Obama. I think it was, as they say, the perfect storm.
I would give it more towards Obama, the Democrats in Capitol Hill, and their coziness with corporate America and not getting anything done had more of an influence than Coakley. But we all have a different opinion of that. That's good. 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts? I said the next caller would be Ellen. Ellen, you're on the air.
Everybody. I can't understand why this discussion is going on anymore. And it seems to me that I didn't vote for Obama because, tell you, I'm in my 60s, and by now it's like, fool me once, fool me twice, you know? I mean, how many times can you fool me? And, you know, and we get the same foreign policy. We have the same foreign policy establishment. You know, the Republicans throw a few crumbs to their base, and the Democrats throw a few crumbs to their base. And the country goes on basically the same way. As soon as Obama came in, he appointed Gates, he appointed Geithner and Larry Summer, the worst people on the planet, and who are, you know, totally undemocratic people, and, you know, in favor of the same old, you know, policy issues, that, you know, foreign policy, invasion, this. We just sent 14,000 Marines to Haiti to keep the Haitians from, you know, getting on boats and coming to Florida, and instead of sending, you know, the stuff they really need. It's the same old stuff, and, you know, just they put a nice, fresh face on it. Look, Obama was brilliant, brilliant as a campaigner. If he had just continued that, I mean, he's been, as far as I can tell, silent on these great issues. And if he had spoken up, he had the whole world's attention. He had the whole country gaga. And, you know, I was in Vienna 4 days before the election, before the inauguration, and the taxi driver asked where I was from, and I said I was American, and he said, 4 more days.
Wow.
I mean, you know, this is how the whole world, you know, everywhere I went in Europe, everyone was, you know, wanted to have a conversation about Obama and what I thought was going to happen. And I had to tell them, I don't think much is going to happen. And I'm unfortunately proved right. It's impossible for someone who really wants to change the system to get elected. The system does not allow those people. Kevin Zeese was just there. I mean, he's, you know, a perfect example. And, you know, you can't get in if you... You know, if you want to, it's just impossible. Chesterton once said about the English government that if there were really two parties, it wouldn't be a system. And
Ellen, I we get to the call again. I'm glad you're back on the air with us.
I'm not surprised. I'm disheartened again, of course. But you know, I don't know why anybody's surprised at what happened, because he didn't try. He tried to get elected. He was brilliant, and then after that, he just basically didn't try.
Ellen, thank you.
I think it's premature to say that Obama doesn't have the leadership skills or doesn't have what I would call progressive values. Again, I would come back to the fact that he had a strategy, which was to be a consensus and to reach out and so forth. I think he's going to realize, as smart as he is, and as far as I'm concerned, as you know, the good values that he has, that he's going to shift his approach. I would be astonished if he didn't. And I think hopefully that will be in the populist direction. One other comment, which is, you know, it looks like we can't elect, the country won't elect a progressive, but I'm not sure. Do you know of any Democrat who has run as a populist? It hasn't happened. And it seems to me that that's the future of the Democratic Party if it's going to do the right things for this country. Gore started out that way and quickly backed off. It just hasn't happened, and I'd love to see it happen.
Maybe one of the things we'll go back to the phones here, but maybe one of the problems is that people thought in Massachusetts, the people are confused in America, no matter what their ideology is that the Democrats are so obviously tied to corporate America. Everything they do in these bills has come out of corporate lobbyists, and not, you know, they give all the money to Harry Reid and everybody else. On the other hand, the Republicans, all they have to do is sit back because they're as tied to the corporate lobbyists as the Democrats. And so if the Democrats lose these battles, they win. And in some sense, if they win these battles, they win. So, I mean, I think that's why you're seeing so many people who voted in the last election did not vote in these elections that took place in Virginia, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and why is it people protested and shifted and voted Republican when they voted for Barack Obama in the beginning?
I think that if you're going to look at the Democrats that are representing their constituents right now, so many of them look like Republicans. Why not just elect the Republicans are a little more honest about
right
that kind of stuff.
At least they're honest about being corporate Americans.
Right. I'm not sure that a Republican administration would have rescued GM. And people, more than anything like that, are angry about GM. And then for the unions, especially the UAW, come back and not want the Cadillac health plans be taxed, because guess who has Cadillac health plans other than CEOs? Union workers.
Yeah, but wait a minute. People fought for the right to have health care plans. Cadillac health, you see, people call them Cadillac health plans. All they mean is that you're covered, that you don't have to. You know, Cadillac health plans mean that you don't have to worry about what hospital and doctor you go to. You don't have to worry about paying for pharmaceuticals. And we call it Cadillac. The problem is that most people in this country have Chevettes that blow up in your face. That's the health plans that they have. That's the problem.
Well, I would also argue that we cannot underplay that the election in Virginia, Cray Deeds was a horrible candidate who ran from Obama. The governor of New Jersey had ethical questions out the yin-yang, and Coakley was a horrible candidate. And I think, as Buzzy said, perfect storm. A lot going on the national level, and the Democrats are choosing losers on the local level.
Let's try to get a couple more callers in here before the end of the hour. And Maurice, you're on the air. Hi, Maurice. You're on the air.
Just a couple of comments. And the fact of the matter is, whether we like it or not, there are a couple of things that we got to take into consideration. One, I would like to see Obama be an eight-year president, a two-term president. And in order for you to make it through the first term and be elected to the second term, you've got to play the game. The second thing is that regardless of whether we like it or not, because I really did appreciate, I'm sick and tired of bipartisanship. So not that I have a problem with the two-party system. I have a problem with not being able to come together on anything. I'm sick and tired of the party of no. So that's something that Obama has had to deal with throughout his first year, is dealing with the party of no. No matter how he tried to reach across the aisle, it was thwarted at every turn by the party of no. So you can't look at his leadership skills in a vacuum. I think he's been a good leader. As the gentleman there on the panel has said, he's a smart guy. He will adapt and he will adjust. I expect him, though, whether I like it or not, I expect him, though, to make some concessions, because he'll have to make some concessions to be a two-term president.
Is there a difference, from what you were just saying, Maurice, for our panel here, between being centrist and
yes.
and being what we people seem to be entitled, which is this word bipartisan?
I remember one of the earlier callers said, between centrist and the far left. It seems to me there's something between being a centrist, with or without bipartisan support, and being the far left. And I think Obama has not found that ground yet. I think he will, hopefully beginning with health care, put through that House bill. And the second thing is, next three things he should do are jobs, jobs, jobs. And I think hopefully he can grab the high ground, grab the narrative with a very strong second stimulus package, the kind that Joseph Stiglitz and Paul Krugman and William Grider wanted him to do the first time around.
And
I think that, you know, just some historic perspective here. One is President Obama is at a disadvantage because there is not a cohesive Republican message. President Clinton had the advantage of the Newt Gingrich contract on America, and he co-opted that message. There is no message to co-opt this time. And we haven't seen a real president in the sense of his policies, because George W. Bush was interrupted by 9/11.
And you have for the day, Anne McCarthy.
Said my piece.
At last word of the day, Anne McCarthy, Associate Dean Johns Hopkins Carey Business School, Anthony McCarthy, of course, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show, Buzzy Hedelman, whose book, It's the Classroom Stupid, A Plan to Save America's School Children. I'll have a talk at Enoch Pratt Central Library Tuesday, January 26th at 6:30 p.m., and then be back on the show to talk about that book. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Heart Center, where expert cardiologists, cardiac surgeons, nurses, and support staff have built a nationally recognized program focused on prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation. For a virtual tour of the Heart Center, go to www.umm.edu/heart. Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gabe Pinder, and Marianne Moss. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.